Welcome to the Warrior Soul Podcast. This is Chris Albert, and this is episode 23. I'm going to start this episode off with a question. What do you want the story of your life to be like? I ask this question because it leads to another very important question, and that is why? What is your purpose? Why do you do what you do? And it's a question you should ask yourself every time you start something new. When I started as an entrepreneur, in a lot of ways, it was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. You know, when you go to bed at night and you're wondering about how you're going to pay your own bills and how you're going to put the next meal on the table. These are things that entrepreneurs deal with on a regular basis. And a lot of people would ask, how do you get through that? How do you get through that period of doubt, that period of pain and suffering that you're putting in to make your dream come true? And there's not really an easy answer for that, but there is a definitive answer. And that answer is why. Why are you doing the business in the first place? And it's important because if you don't understand your why, those hard days, those days when there is no real certainty, when you're going to bed at night and you're wondering how you're going to pay your bills next month, and you're wondering where you're going to get your next meal from. Those days can really have an impact if your why isn't strong enough, and they can lead you down the path to quitting. And sometimes we look at very successful entrepreneurs and we think about them as being lucky, and we only see the successful aspects of what they're doing. The two guests that Andrew and I are interviewing today are two amazing entrepreneurs. Both of them are veterans, both served as Army Rangers, and they started a company called Combat Flip Flops. And during this interview, they give so many gems of knowledge. And it's not your typical, hey, you know, I came, I saw, I conquered. No, these guys literally had to grind to get this business off the ground. And they're still grinding on it today to keep the business going. You're going to hear some crazy stories about how they set up their manufacturing in Afghanistan, crazy stories about how they prepared for their appearance on Shark Tank, and how Griff prepared for his TED Talk. You're going to hear some crazy stories about the beginnings of their business, where they literally had to make 4,000 pairs of flip-flops by hand themselves before they could get their manufacturing set up. What I want you to do during this episode, though, is to think about that question at the beginning. What do you want the story of your life to be like? Because from that idea is where you're going to get your why. And when you listen to Griffin Lee speak, you're going to see how strong their why was. And how strong their purpose is. So, without further ado, I bring you what I think is one of the best podcast episodes we've done so far. This is the story of Combat Flip Flops and all the good they're doing for this world and for the veteran community. This is Chris Albert, and I'm here to remind you of one thing. Someday, you're going to die. Now, that's not some morbid statement or scary idea. It's solid fact. Your time here on this earth is limited. And you need to be reminded of this as much as possible for one simple reason. To live your best life while you can. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast.
This is Andrew and Chris from the Warrior Soul Podcast, and today we're excited to bring you Griff and Lee from the company Combat Flip Flops, and they're going to get into that incredible mission and what that business is, and we're going to kind of dissect their lives as entrepreneurs, what their life was like in the military transitioning, and you know, their reason behind, their why, what is their new mission, and how they are applying it. And so again, I don't want to give away too much about them before we dive into it. And so now I Griff, Lee, thanks for coming on. I think I'd like to have both of you just give a brief background about how you got into the military. Why did you want to go into the military? And then how did you two guys meet, in the military?
Lee, you're first, brother.
I'll go first. I joined the military after 9/11. I was pretty simple. Military was always something I wanted to do, but when I got out of high school, I chose the college route. I went to art school for design. And after 9/11, you know, just like most Americans, I was pissed off, but seen as I wanted it. The military was always something that I wanted to do, just from outside influence, father's friends, things like that. There was no better time to do it. I went in as soon as the recruiting offices opened after 9/11, and I enlisted with a Option 40 Ranger contract. And shortly after, I was at Second Ranger.
Nice. And now you had a college degree, is that right, Lee? When you enlisted, Did your parents or anybody give you any flack for not going OCS route or anything else?
You know what? Like, I kind of did the research. I knew where I wanted to go. I knew what I wanted to do. I wanted to be with guys that are there to win. Mm-hmm. That's why I specifically went in with a Ranger contract. Not to knock anybody or regular Army dudes, but, you know, the biggest fear I had was going and fighting beside guys that were in the Army just for college money. So, you know, I went the Ranger route. Again, I wanted to go with all the meat eaters that just wanted to win. So that's really why I went that route. I joined when I was 25. So that was a lot. That was really interesting. A really interesting thing in my life too. But, when I joined, it was just for that. I wanted to go make a difference, you know, after 9/11, and that's why I did it.
Yeah, absolutely. Griff, how about you, my man?
I'm fourth generation military. My great grandfather fought in World War I. My grandfather right there fought in World War II as a tail gunner in an A-20 Havoc. My dad is a retired Army officer. And then so it just seemed like the logical thing to do, just raised in that kind of environment going in. So I was fortunate enough that when I was really young, my dad was an instructor at West Point. I really liked the academy. I liked the people that were there. And I always had it in my head that I wanted to go. So I went, graduated the class of 2001, so the 9/11 class, commissioned artillery just because I like, if you're going to blow something up, you might as well blow it up really big. I guess it's really,
so that you was to be a bear, be a grizzly, right?
Yeah, that's right. And during my time during the military, they used to have Ranger demonstrations at the academy every now and then. And I just remember one night they came in blazing on a Blackhawk with miniguns rolling, and the RSOVs came charging out of the woods and looked like porcupines with all the machine gun barrels coming off of them. And they were just raging, and thought to myself, man, when I join the Army, I want to go hang out with those dudes. They look like a lot of fun. And so that's what I did, is I just went through artillery basic, Ranger school, my first conventional unit. And I applied to be a company fire support officer at Second Ranger Battalion. And I ended up getting admitted in the summer of 2003. So right as Lee was coming back from Iraq. And then we met in the team room, and everybody had their combat scrolls, and I didn't have anything. So that's how we met, is all the privates giving me a hard time. So that was it. Yeah.
Nothing like privates giving the commissioned officer a tough time for not having the appropriate combat stripes.
Correct. Yep. So that's how we met, and we did a short train up together. Then we ended up going to Operation Winter Strike, which is the winter of 2003 going into 2004. It was a really burly, intensive mission. up in the Hindu Kush, past in the Kunar province, past the Korangal Valley. So we were way out there. And yeah, we were just living with the people off the land, hunting bad dudes down in the middle of winter. And that's where we kind of built our bond and started talking business and entrepreneurship and all the other things you're doing while you're sitting around on guard, just waiting to do things. And we'd always talked about business. And through the next couple of deployments, we just stayed thick as thieves. Lee was always one of those guys. He was the perpetual naysayer on the team, and every team's got one, and that's Lee, and he still fills that role. but yeah, when shit hit the fan, you could always trust him. And so that's just how we built our bond, and we stayed tight ever since.
And so, man, that idea kind of started to spring out in those early deployments. Hey, we definitely want to do a business together. And it just started to develop there.
we didn't know what kind of business. We just knew we wanted to start a business, right?
Yeah.
Probably like there were 130 ideas, and I mean, one was we were going to get a little motorcycle hooked up to some kind of shack that we would pull around and sell coffee. Coffee, right?
It's like a coffee delivery service, right? If we would have started it now, people would have an app, and we'd put somebody on a moped. They go run over there and make them a Lee special cinnamon sugar-free dulce latte or whatever it is.
write that idea down.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was like one of a million. And, no, but the interesting part is combat flip-flops actually came in the form of like a really late night call, maybe like a 3 a.m. call from Griff from Afghanistan. And, you know, I was up, it was 3 a.m. Why wouldn't I be up? So mm-hmm. I had to call and, hey, we're going to do this. I'm okay, sure, why not? Let's do this. And, you know, we buy the domain, form the company, and, you know, we're here. It was one of those things where the dumbest, craziest ideas ends up having some ray of sunshine or brightness behind the idea. And this was one.
So, Griff, what would you say that you're calling him up at 3 a.m., you got the idea for the business. What is your pitch to Lee at that time?
Hey, bro, I was in a factory and I saw where they're making flip-flops at a combat boot factory. Let's start a company, Combat Flip-Flops. Get on GoDaddy, register the domain name. My dial-up's too slow here. Okay, man, we got this. We'll do it. Yeah, and that was it. All right, man, I think the story has a little bit more background than that. You know, Lee had already done Iraq, so he'd seen some hard times, and then I come out of Iowa, out of the academy, through officer basic course and all the training. And I live a standard Western life. And I remember going through rope when they're doing your orientation. They had a psychologist, you know, they psychologically evaluate you and everything else. And the one thing, the comment that he had for me was, you don't have empathy. But really just the word, right? Just big knuckle dragging, meat eating guy. And he says, you know, it's something you really need to work on is empathy. And to be honest, I didn't know. I knew what the word was, but I really didn't know what it meant. And go figure, you know, it's one of those things when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And as soon as we rolled out of Bagram through the front gate, and I'm sure multiple people here have done that drive heading south toward Kabul, it was the Wild West back then. When you see those kids with no shoes and, you know, water bottles and all the other things, they're just begging for whatever they have. And that hit me. It's like, holy crap, these people are poor. They are destitute. They need some help. And then it went downhill from there. You know, birth defects, polio, you know, just being oppressed by violence, addicted to drugs, all those other things that you see up in those valleys. And they're not getting to see those after school specials like we got to see when we were kids. They don't have school counselors to help them out. Then nobody's going to call their parents. You know, it's really kind of a helpless situation. It's really where I think Lee and I both had some transformative experiences there where we developed a good sense of empathy with the culture of the Afghans. And that just led us to always want to go back and help. And it just came in the form of a flip-flop in industry. It just seemed to me like a positive, sustainable change that nobody's going to get hurt. Everybody digs it. And it's just a good way to really put the American flag forward around the world is get through good, solid, sustainable business.
Outstanding. One question I have, and I ask this of entrepreneurs, is, you know, I think a lot of people, they see you know, you guys on Shark Tank, and they see you on your TED Talk, and they see success. And as an entrepreneur, as a fellow entrepreneur, I know that there's a lot of, you know, fear and pain involved in the first stages. Can you tell us about those first stages and maybe some of the difficulties you ran into and some of the ways you overcame them?
Lee, your turn.
We're still going through, man. I mean, honestly, we've been doing this for like, what, 4 or 5 years now?
4 years, yeah.
4 years now. And this is really the first year that we picked up traction. Like, we're really, you know, the scale that we were doing business on the previous 3 years was so small that we're really getting our business learnings this year. I mean, you know, we were on Shark Tank and we've had some very positive media coverage, you know, through printed publication and online medium. And we're not, man, it's still a struggle. I'm telling you, like, we are still grinding because, you know, we're making decisions, you know, any forecast. This one thing I've said to the guys all the time, like, forecasts are just guesses, man. We could take industry standard conversion rates based on traffic and this metric and that metric. And your first year of really doing business, those don't mean anything. They're just guesses. So what we're going through right now is, you know, we've been smart enough to make some very, very strong guesses. And we've been very close to hitting our targets. I mean, very close to hitting what we projected, but we're still going through the grind. You know, we have to order inventory to keep it on the ground. That costs money. We have to figure out what's going to sell. We have to figure out the trends before we actually get there. And, you know, if we make decisions based on last year's metrics, they're just not going to hold water because we're moving at a pace that we've never moved before and at a scale we've never been at before. So we are still learning, but by no means are we these guys that have millions of dollars because of but we will get there.
Yeah.
I think that there's this kind of idea out there that once you become an entrepreneur and you supposedly make it, you know, you're sitting down beside a pool and, you know, you got your frozen tropical drink and your bikini girl by your side and things are okay. But the reality is, you know, those of us in business, a lot of times we're grinding for life. And you gotta start to learn to love the grind a bit. You gotta start to learn to love the work involved a bit, because that is your life. And when the grind's over, the business is over, really.
There's always something. There's something I always told my wife, you know, early on when I really started reaching out and becoming an entrepreneur, even before Combat Flip Flops. You know, she's like, you know, let's, how about we just get stable and you know, get a good paying job and you know, all that good stuff. And I kind of looked at her and I had made a comment to her that it's always in my head. If you're not moving forward, you're moving backwards, right? It doesn't matter. If you're standing still, you're moving backwards because everybody's moving forwards. And as an entrepreneur, you have to go out and you have to grind things out. Like, I don't think I could, because of the way I operate and Griff operates as an entrepreneur, I can never see myself working for another person again. Like, I will always go out and make my own job moving from this point in my life on. Right. I mean, that's just the grind, man. If you need money and you need success, you have to go out and get it. I mean, it doesn't matter how bad things suck. I mean, Griff and I, you know, Griff is my brother. Griff is my brother. He'll walk in front of a Mack truck for me. I have no doubt about it. And we've been through the grind together and we're going to continue to get through this. And this is going to be successful no matter what happens, right? We're going to continue to move forward.
Yeah. I mean, the way I explain it, entrepreneurship is, I have to give like a mental visualization. You just drive yourself back to some Native American tribe a couple of hundred years ago. There's the hunters and the gatherers. And there's probably like the old chiefs in the village and the merchants and the guys who are tanning all the leathers. But the entrepreneurs are those guys who strap on the loincloth, the bag of nuts, and grab the bow and arrow and disappear up into the mountains to go drag big game back. And when you're first hunting for all the hunters there, you're going to go hungry. You're going to be tired. You're going to be cold, right? But that animal doesn't change. It's still a big old nasty elk that you got to bring down. And it's just one of those things, like, when you're a young entrepreneur, you're going to fail. You're going to make mistakes. You're not going to be thinking about the wind. You're not going to be thinking about the distance. Your aim is going to be off. All those other things, that all it just takes is for you to fail multiple times to where you get hungry enough to where you learn not to fail anymore. And that's just really it, is the animal doesn't get any smaller. You just get better.
What was your most, this is going to sound counterintuitive, but bear with me. What was your most beneficial mistake? What I mean by that, what was the mistake that taught you the most?
Okay. Which one do you think it is, Lee?
Ship the fucking container here.
Yeah, that was it.
Explain that, please.
So when we started, like, you got to understand this. Like, we've never ran a business. We don't even know how to make shoes. Like, really, and we're going to start a flip-flop company. And so we find through Lee, because he worked for some online sales and marketing for some shoe guys, and he reached out to his network. We called him, and like, yeah, we can make you some prototypes. And so we started making shoes, and that's how it started. Is we sold, I think I sold my motorcycle and my boat, and I paid for all of our tooling and for our first run of samples, right? We went to a show. We showed them off. People thought it was cool. They bought thousands of pair. We went, ordered up all of our materials, went to go ship them to Afghanistan. The border's closed. Okay, while we're working the workaround, our factory closes down. They lost their government contract. They go, hey, we can manufacture this first run, but you got to hustle the materials here quickly. So we called up our material manufacturer and said, chop, chop, get going, bro. Get it out there. June delivery turns into July, turns into August. And then mid-August, my brother and I just said, screw it. Let's just fly to Afghanistan and go get our footwear. So my brother, our co-founder, Andy, he's not on the call today. We flew to Afghanistan with duffel bags, and we were going to get them out on our own if we had to. We show up there. Our material supplier did a bait and switch in a hurry, and it was 100% fail rate. We had to give them all away. We opened the doors up and gave thousands of pairs of flip-flops to Afghans in need.
Wow.
And then we got into a car. We bounced around Kabul. We found another factory that wanted to work with us. We told our customers what had happened, and it said, hey, guys, Griff's personally going to put 4,000 pair of flip-flops on his personal credit card. We'll make this right. Just hang with us. And then I bought 4,000 pair of flip-flops on my credit card without telling my wife.
Surprise!
Surprise, right? Flew back home. For 2 months, we were doing everything. Everything was going fine. December 6th, we got a call from our material supplier. Hey, materials are done. Get them off our dock. 2 hours later, I got a call from our new manufacturer saying they had just lost their boot contract and they were going to go out of business, and we couldn't manufacture with them. So one bad run, one closed factory, second closed factory, and now I've got 4,000 pair of flip-flops in raw material form in China.
Where do you go from there?
We shipped into my garage. We built a gorilla flip-flop factory in our garage, and we learned how to make our footwear. And we just did. That was it. That's all we had. We had our basically time or money, and all we had was time at that point because we were out of money, and it was everybody else's. And we needed to deliver product. Otherwise, we were going to be out double that money in returns. And, we learned, like, got smart on adhesives and glues and sanders and process times and ovens and everything else, and we learned our product out under the glue, which has now helped us be able to go to different manufacturers and negotiate and bargain our pricing and our construction and our quality. And they can't argue with us because they go, oh no, it takes a minute 15 to sand this flip flop. And then our 6'7" Wookie, what's his nickname is Andy. He rolls over there, grabs a flip flop and sands one off in 36 seconds and hands it back to him and says, no, you're going to charge me for 36 seconds.
You're doing it wrong.
I'm not paying for your learning. Like, you're doing it wrong, right? And like, because we've gone through that process and we know how it works, it's really helped us out as a company, drive more profitability into the business, so that way we can contribute more to our philanthropic initiatives. That was a long explanation, but that was it.
It was a great one. I think it comes down to, man, like, who dares wins, right? And you had to have the balls and the foresight to even win. Hey, the shit's hit the fan, but you know what? We're going to get on a plane. We're going to go to Afghanistan. We're going to figure it out. We're going to bring stuff over here. And it takes that type of tenacity to make something work. You know, same thing when you're operating. Same thing in business. But, you know, and I think it goes back to what we're talking about entrepreneurs is oftentimes – entrepreneurs come out with a solution, but they don't really fully understand what is the problem. You know, we have to identify what problem are we answering? Are we meeting? And so what was your guys' idea or design phase, you know, coming up with, hey, this is the problem that we've seen, and this is how we want to offer this solution in this new and creative way.
I think the problem that we identified, I mean, so for us, what we're doing, there's a two-prong attack, right? One is a short-term and one is a long-term solution, right? So obviously we see the problem is the lack of jobs in Afghanistan, right? And anywhere you go, lack of jobs, lack of money is, you know, you see the crime rate rise, all that good stuff, right? And then that made the local population more susceptible to radical recruitment, right? So our two-prong attack, our short-term and our long-term, right? Short-term, employ women, right? They get paid, the money goes back into the economy, right? Lowers crime rates. Okay, everybody's taking a small piece of the pie. Long-term, educate women, they educate their kids. The kids grow up to be educated adults. Now they're not as likely to be radicalized, right? So long-term, we're literally taking away the radical recruitment base, right? Those are the two problems that we're solving with what we're doing, right? So you always have to have a long and a short term, and what we're doing, they both play hand in hand, right? So you can say we're stimulating the economy and encouraging entrepreneurship, and we're fighting terrorism with flip-flops, right?
I love it, man. It's just, my God, it's beautiful. How did you have to bring that to the local populace, and how difficult was it to get them to buy in? You know, as far as, oh, I'm going to allow my wife or daughter to go work in this factory.
It's not tough, man. I started traveling back to Afghanistan in like 2008 in a medical capacity. And when I was there, I wasn't in uniform. I had a briefcase. I had cash. I was hiring local drivers. I was staying at local hotels, and they're motivated to keep me happy and keep me there, right? The safer I am, the happier I am, the more times I come back and the more money I spend in their local economy, right? And you hear everybody there, from the concierge of the hotel to the driver to the security guys. Like, if you guys are bringing economy, bring it. We love visitors. We just don't like invaders. You guys are cool. So when you go there and you say, hey, I'd like to buy this product from you, and I want to buy, you know, 15 of them now, and if they're good, I'm going to buy 45 of them from you next month, and then 450 of them next year. They go, really? Nobody else does that. Yeah. And, well, how are you going to get me the money? Well, I'll Western Union it to you. Like, nobody's going to take that money from you. Not the bank, nothing. Like, push your national ID. I will send you the money, drop the box off at DHL, get it to me. We'll continue to do that. And they go, really? Like, yeah. I mean, do you imagine, like, us, we're kind of weird looking guys, and we're standing there talking with Afghans, telling them how we're going to send them thousands of dollars if they just send us scarves and chamas, right? Mm-hmm. Like, go down to the market, right? And make 500 of them in this color, and then I'll send you a couple $1,000. Like, the average wage for an Afghan is $600 a year. Right? It's blowing their minds, and the opportunity, they love it. They want to hire everybody and all their families and keep that going. So it's the buy-in is, it's not hard. Everybody wants to earn a good living. Yeah.
My mouth is still a little open from that story about, you know, having to make the flip-flops in your garage. I think that's just absolutely amazing, because, you know, sometimes I coach entrepreneurs, you know, give advice to entrepreneurs, and when they run into computer trouble, their brain shuts down and they don't want to keep going. But you guys literally figured out how to make flip-flops. You understood the process and then perfected it. And that allowed you to perfect your manufacturing line and to understand how to save money, how to find good manufacturers of the product. I mean, I mean, my mouth is lit. Like, I'm literally shocked. Like, I got goosebumps.
No, but I'll be honest. Like, you really shouldn't be, right? Like, if you look at it as an entrepreneur, right? Entrepreneur, you're going to go out and make things happen on your own, right?
Yep.
With an entrepreneur, you can't depend on anybody other than yourself. Yep. At this point, where we were at this point of the game, right, or the point we were at in the game, it was like, F this. We can't rely on anybody anymore. Like, bring the fucking materials here and we're going to get it done, right? Like, we are going to do it. We're not going to rely on these guys anymore. We're going to do it. I'll be honest with you, though. When my idea when we talked about shipping the materials, it was like, just get them here and we'll find somebody here to make them. But Andy, our third partner, Andy, he was the one that said, no, man. Like, he had this look in his eye, like, I got this, right? I mean, he just had that glare, the little, his eyes got beady, and he's like, no, man, I got this. And I've never seen anybody in my entire life educate themselves that fast on glue and rubber. I mean, just the things that he figured out and the things that he learned about our manufacturing process, my mind was blown, right? Like, watching him go through this. You know, but the part where we decide to do it ourselves, like, that's us being not dependent on a third party to do this. Like, we're going to get it done. Just put it in our hands, and we're going to take it into the end zone for a TD, right? Like, we got this.
Yeah, I always go back to the missions and the mindset we learned in the military, right? You got an objective. Hey, you hit an obstacle. You got two choices. Breach or bypass. You're going through that thing. There's one or the other. Breach or bypass. That's it. That's all you get. There's no way we're not getting to that objective, right? And there's nobody on this planet that's going to stop you. You get enough highly motivated people behind you that are dedicated to tackling an obstacle, that obstacle will get tackled, right? If you got a whole bunch of guys that'll give up when the going gets tough, then that's what you got. But it's just not our team. And the second thing is in this, I think the thing that separates when we talk about special operations is the one thing that I really found out, the differentiator being like all the different communities, is the question, why? Why are we doing it this way? What's the history behind it? Why are we motivated? Why, right? And people don't get insulted when you ask why, because everybody's trying to figure out how can I make it better? How can I make it lighter? How can I make it faster? And through all the learnings in the process that we had, you know, breaching those obstacles, going around certain things, asking why things were done in certain ways. We use a different adhesive system than all the other manufacturers. We use different rubbers, right? Because we asked why things were made a certain way. And then we go, oh, okay, how can we make it better? How can we add our value? That's what we did. We figured it out on our own. We went through the obstacle, asked why, figured out the how. And then we went down to our manufacturer who's been making high-end women's boots and footwear in Colombia for years now. And we were able to go down there and look at his production line and go, hey, man, we could boost your productivity 50%. We're going to show you how, right? And that's what our community is supposed to do. We're supposed to figure out the problems, figure out the solutions, and then we give them away to everybody else. So that way it raises the level of everybody so you can get on to figure out the next problem.
That's it, man. And, you know, I think what it gets down to is challenging the status quo with an open mind and looking at it from new and different angles, new eyes on it. So I think a lot of your strengths that you guys pulled from allowed you to see that industry from a new perspective that wasn't being looked at. And so then you find new ways to do it and you pioneer new things like that. And that's what happens when you have the right mindset and you have the right team. How difficult is it to assemble the right team? How difficult was it for you guys to assemble the right team and then to get them all on the same page, understanding the mission?
I don't know. I mean, we've definitely ground through some people, some guys who wanted to be entrepreneurs and startup folks who wanted to hustle us when we first started because they saw the opportunity. But when rubber hit the road, you know, their wherewithal became apparent. And they just kind of faded away while the rest of us just kept chugging along. We give a talk on values, value-based leadership. And if you can articulate your values as a leadership team and your mission statement, and then hire people that have the same value system as you, your culture will form. And that's what it is. And we just have a culture of, you know, candor, directness, hard work, persistence, creativity, and it took us a couple of years to really figure it out. But once we said, hey, these are our values, these are the type of people that we're going to hire, they kind of just gravitated toward us. I really can't explain it any other way other than the people that said, yeah, I'm really hardworking. I'm really creative. I'm down with this. I want to go work for you guys. They became really persistent, started banging down our door and working with us.
I mean, let's take our social media girl, for instance.
Yeah. Mandy.
She's a gangster. I mean, you know, there's no other way to put it. She's a gangster, and she showed her commitment to the mission very early on, and she worked for free for how long?
2.5 years.
Wow.
and I mean, Mandy is like this girl, just self-starter, motivated, you know, when there's no direction, just attack, right? Just go after it. And she's doing it. You know, she's helped us grow our social channels to where they are. She's, you know, helping shape the story, the mission, all that stuff. Like, she's been really great. She's we've been very fortunate to have people like her on the team, right? We have, you know, our team is small, but our team is very effective. You know, in Spanish, they say pocos, pero locos, you know, small, but crazy. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what we are. We've got a small team, but we're crazy and we get shit done. And we're very fortunate, a very blessed company to have the people we have around us.
As far as leadership principles go, what are the similarities and what are the differences between being in the Army and leading a team there versus leading your current team with the combat foot pops? Have you had to change anything in your personalities? Have you had to change anything in the way you direct people at all?
if you had access to our Skype conversations, what do you think, Griff?
No, I think between us, like, we realize the way that we talk and communicate, or the way that we were trained, people just can't handle it. Mm-hmm. They just can't handle our directness and our humor. And, you know, Lee will call me out on my shit. Like, you're being a dick. I can't believe you're doing that. You suck, right? And anybody else would hear that and like, oh, God, yeah. But like, and I'll say the same thing to him. Like, get your lazy ass up. You didn't get that thing done yet. It's been on the calendar for 2 months. What's the matter with you? Right? And we could say that to one another, but we know, like, in 5 minutes, we'll be back to playing grab ass and making fun of each other's, like, phallic size. Whatever, right? But it's just what we do. But I think just for me personally, like, I learned a lot coming out of the military in the fact that people that work for you don't have to work for you. You have all the tools to be a good leader. You just got to polish those edges up a little bit more and figure out how to do things where you can, I wouldn't say internally motivate people, but, you know, do it in a manner where you don't have to be so direct, where they don't have to be externally motivated. I guess that's it. So.
Awesome. And then with, you know, you guys are working with some pretty high power people. Do you notice any difference in the way that, say, like Mark Cuban conducts business? What if there's a big difference between him and anybody else you've worked with? Can you identify those key things that he's got that you think you want to develop?
So Mark opened the Navy Exchange for us last month, and you know, I'll be quite honest, other than email communication, like, that was the first time that I had seen him since Shark Tank, right? And, you know, you've been around him since Shark Tank. And the fact that he flew in and opened the store for us, when he got on the ground, right, we just thought it was great he was going to come in. And when he got on the ground, it was, what do I need to do to make this better? What do I need to do to sell more? Everything was, tell me how you need to use me and let's get it done. It was, there was no, I'm fucking Mark Cuban, just throw money at me. It was, I'm here to help my guys. I got your back 100% and then some. What do you need me to do? Put me in the game, coach. And it wasn't him going, it wasn't Mark showing up, you know, trying to be big guy, you know, billionaire. He was there to help us grow our business. He was there to help grow his business, right? I mean, that's the one thing that I got from Mark by being around him. You know, just that, you know, the few hours we were there opening that store, it was whatever I need to do to help drive that cash, I'm going to do it. I'm going to get after it. Let's get it done. All business, right? He's like, you want me to walk the store? If you think it'll sell product, I'll walk the store. You want me to take pictures with people? I'll sit and take pictures and sign autographs. Tell me what to do. That's what I got out of it. And I really dug that. Like, he was all like, go, 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 all game.
So it wasn't like he was coming in and directing you guys at all. He wanted to know what you guys needed, how you guys could best utilize him, how best you guys could utilize the resources that he had to sell more product and accomplish the mission.
Yeah, that was exactly it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think it boils down to, I think, leadership style. The way I personally feel about it, I can't remember who taught me it, but if I am holding up one of my team members because I haven't done my job or gotten them the information they need, that's the biggest failure that I can have as a leader, right? We should be empowering and enabling like our teammates to be the best people and staff they can be, right? So my priority when I come into work, is there something that I owe somebody else? Is the information that I need to distribute so somebody else can do their job? Because as a leader, you need to be ensuring your team is out doing the best that they can, right? Because that's going to free you up the space to be able to plan further forward, get after bigger opportunities. And I really think that Mark embodies that, where he really tries to get out as much information as possible. The dude answers emails at absurd hours of the evening and at an unbelievable rate. So he does communicate well and gets all the information out to his team members that they need to succeed.
Hey, for the audience that hasn't seen it, the guys were on Shark Tank, and I'll let them talk about it, but can we kind of back up and talk about how did you guys get the idea to go on Shark Tank? What was like the tryouts or the workup for that? And then, you know, what was it like on there? And I think that'll make more sense to anybody who didn't. It's not tracking your connection with Mark Cuban.
You know, it was a very I don't know what I'd call it, but it started with an interview in Santa Monica that I didn't want to, that I, to be honest with you, we had been at four or five different places that day. It was a really long day. And I was like, I don't, Griff, do we really got to do this one? He's like, yes, let's do this one. It was for Gizmodo. And I'm sitting here like, do we have to do this? But it was for Gizmodo, right?
Yeah.
And we did it. And Wes, the gentleman who wrote it, really great guy. He wrote this awesome, awesome interview on us, right? He did an awesome interview with us. And I think it was one of, I could probably put it on the wall and say it was probably one of, if not the best interview in those ever done. And it was, we were very fortunate that one of the producers from Shark Tank actually saw the article. And he sent an email to us. And we sent an email back to each other. And we responded and we said, let's do this. And Griff?
Yeah, and then it was a solid train up. You know, we were going to hit it like we were going to hit an objective. Like we were not going to leave any stone unturned. We watched every episode, wrote down all the questions. We patterned them. Like we figured out their backgrounds and their stories and their motivations. We got the dimensions for the freaking hallway. We knew the pacing, the steps. We knew the timing. We did as much research as possible so that when we actually hit the ground, it was not the first time we'd seen it. I'm sure a bunch of other guys who are listening to this, they've hit an objective in training, you know, hundreds of times before they hit it in the ground to really make it count in that 30 seconds or 2 minutes. And that's the mentality that we took is the first time we went on there, those aren't going to be the first times we heard the questions. That's not going to be the first time we entered that room. And it was going to flow just like I did in an objective, and it flowed. We were in there for an hour 45, got what we needed, actually got more than we needed. And we rolled out, right? And that was it.
Was there anything that presented itself to you guys that caught you off guard that you weren't prepared for, or all the preparation just, you know, sometimes it just comes together, man, and it's kind of flows seamlessly. Was that the case?
Yeah. I don't know. I wasn't expecting Cuban to come in, to be honest.
I was, everybody that came in, I expected to come in, but I don't, any of the questions, any of the personalities, none of that surprised us. I mean, we have probably hours of some really fucked up video of us rehearsing.
Yeah.
And it was our business partner, Andy. And, you know, there was some of just me and Griff, but I mean, Andy ran us through the ringer when we were prepping for this. I mean, you know, from random questions to stuff that they already had to, you know, all right, pretend you're walking in, do the timing, take the steps. I mean, me and Griff were in front of a camera walking back and forth like five times. To, you know, simulate walking into the room or whatever, and then Andy would get after us. So I don't think there was any questions or anything that they wanted to know that really surprised us.
Is that why you had the red glow stick ready? As far as was it Kevin? Is that Kevin?
Yeah,
the guy who always says you're dead to me.
Yeah. So you have to know this. So that was Griff's idea. And we actually made the decision the way we make all of our big decisions with a game of rock, paper, scissors. So all of our big decisions are based on the results of rock, paper,
scissors. Rolling the dice, baby. You got to go.
Yeah.
What was the biggest decision you've ever made based off of the Magic 8-Ball right now or rock, paper, scissors?
Should we go on the Warrior Soul podcast?
Offside.
Concentrated ask again, yeah.
Do you remember the decision that we did rock, paper, scissors on right before we walked in?
Oh, that's right. So the goal of producers, right, in all reality TV is drama. Like, that's what it is. It's drama. And, we went in and we thought a fair valuation based on our revenue and earnings. We were on the high side of reasonable to cause enough drama, right? But we weren't going to be unreasonable to where they were going to dismiss us for being idiots in business, right? So we were just riding that edge. We asked for, we put ourselves at a $1.5 million valuation, which was 5X revenue, which is, it's reasonable, but it's high. And then, right before we walk on, the producer's like, I really think you guys should go for, a $3 million valuation, right? And literally, they're like, the cameras are right there. They're putting makeup on me. And the producer's standing right there. It's like, look, man, I'll rock, paper, scissors you for it. And he's like, what? I was like, no, man, you want me to do this? Let's go. And I threw it out, right? And I lost. I lost. And, literally, the lady who was doing my makeup had to stop. And, her mouth was like, you're literally doing this? I was like, why not? Right? And that was just it. And so we turn around right before we go on, and Lee asked me, he's like, are we doing that? I was like, hell no, we're not. Let's go, bro. Let's go. And we walked into the tank.
Give them what they want, man. How many hours did you guys prepare, you think, when you look back at it?
Easily we probably broke 100 to 200 hours.
Oh, no, dude, I think way more than that. I think I probably put in May. I probably put in 200 hours. I think collectively we probably have about 600 or 700 hours into it as a company.
And then I'm interested in your visualization process. Did you guys both have your own mechanisms to run through in your mind as well, in addition to the physical preparations that you went through?
Go ahead, Lee.
You go ahead.
Now, my mental preparation is when it really comes down to it, is your business viable or is it not viable, right? And that's really determined by your profitability and your cash flow. So for me, the biggest thing was having the actual spreadsheet in my head and the big key performance indicators. And when I pulled a certain lever, what does it do over here? So my mental visualization was just changing that spreadsheet in my head and knowing how it affected everything. So that way, when I was there at the show, I could do the math and be able to respond back with an answer in a professional manner.
That's the officer's answer. My answer is, going in there, I was like, oh, man, I hope I don't screw this up. I mean, honestly, and we're standing there, and so we had this planned out, and when we went in there, we knew that, look, Griff is the CEO of the company. He needs to be answering all these important questions, right? Like, if you look at a lot of these Shark Tank episodes where there's more than one guy, there's always one guy that train wrecks it for the other guy, right? And I didn't want to be that guy on national television train wrecking it for our company. But that was my biggest concern, is I didn't want to go, that would jam up what Griff was saying, what we were pitching. All that good stuff. So I guess you stand there for moral support.
Devilishly good looks, Lee.
Yeah.
What I want our audience to take away is the level of preparation it goes into separating yourself. And it's not about separating yourself, so to speak, but it's about doing your best because you believe in what you're doing. At that point, it doesn't become work. That's just life. You know what I mean? We're talking about grinding earlier, but I want to highlight to the audience the level, the degree of preparation you guys put in it into this, understanding the stakes, and understanding what you could win or you could lose in the situation. And again, that is what separates the top 1% from everybody else, is this degree of preparation. And I think confidence is having the ability to know that you prepared to the best of your abilities. And man, you guys knocked it out of the park. It was an awesome episode. If you guys haven't seen it, you need to check it out.
Well, thank you very much. It means a lot. It was a chance for us to share our message and our mission with 11 million people. Like I feel it's my life's work, right? Like this is the stoke that I want to spread. This is the empowerment that I need to push. And if we're going to make a big impact in Afghanistan and all these other areas, I need to put on the most professional presentation possible for my team and for our supporting companies. So that way people will go, hey, those guys have got something. You know, they're kind of right. We should do this and make it work. And fuck, it works. Like it blew up. We did more business in 36 hours than we did in our entire company history.
Wow.
Yeah. It was rad. It was so much fun. Yeah.
Speaking of that, you also did a TED Talk. Did the TED Talk come before Shark Tank or after?
The TED Talk came before Shark Tank.
And so tell me about that. You know, how was your preparation for that? Where did the idea for a TED Talk come from? And what kind of impact do you think that talk has had on you, your business, and the audience that you're catering to?
Yeah, we really try to be, as part of our mission statement, is community connection, and so specifically the veteran community connection. And we try to do as much as we can to be, you know, connected to the veteran community wherever we are locally. So I was at a Nike event for veterans, and I just happened to meet a guy there, which is my first advice to anybody who's listening here, to all you entrepreneurs, is your network is your net worth, right? Expand your network, meet as many people as possible, because you never know when that's going to pan out for you. And he said, hey, I'm putting together a TED Talk. You know, we're sponsoring it. You got a really interesting story. Would you be interested in telling one? Yes. The answer to those opportunities is always yes. I don't care how scared you are. The answer is yes. So I said yes. And then I had no idea what I was going to talk about. And I was out hunting in Hawaii with a bunch of my buddies, and I still had written it. And we were just kind of sitting there, you know, one day, and I was just trying to figure out where we were going to go next. And I had to stop and sit, and I was on a beautiful side of a mountain, and you know, could see all the way down to the beach, and my buddies just went off. I just sat down there, and I really wrote what I thought about what we were doing. And it's really a tough thing for people to be able to put it out there, right? Because it's a different picture of what you see of an Army Ranger, right? Like, being really emotionally affected by watching a little girl get beat. Going back to Afghanistan and then seeing all these people being creative and building a relationship that way. Right. Looking back at other data and showing people where we've done it in history, and like, hey, like we didn't just say we were going to do it. We did it. And it feels boastful, especially coming out of our community. Right. We just don't talk a lot about what we do. And there's Jill. We tend to marginalize those things. And thank you very much, Jill. Appreciate it. I'm on a podcast. You want to say hi? This is one of those awesome staff we were talking
about. Hi, Jill. How you doing?
This is Jill. Hi. All right. Thank you. She had to bring by our Inc. magazine for the podcast later. So see this? Full page article in Inc. this month. Yeah. So, I think for me personally, it shifted the mindset where knowing that I had to also become the chief storytelling officer, if people were really going to pay attention to what we were doing. And when we first started, we went down to talk to the guys at Tom's, and they said Blake went from the CEO to the CSO really quickly, because it's the story, it's the idea that moves the product. And so I think that was a really pivotal moment for me, realizing that I really have to take this role seriously as the chief storytelling officer to drive the company forward.
I can definitely relate, Griff, because being in SF for a number of years, like you said, you just don't talk about those things. But you realize that, hey, if I'm not glorifying combat, or I'm not, you know, giving away secrets, and this is something that is going to be to the benefit of the listeners to hear it, then we have to find a way to get over ourselves. And, you know, I tie that in with what we were doing with our foundation. But, you know, the thing is, if we don't get out and we don't tell these stories, we don't give these lessons learned that were paid for in blood, then people aren't going to be able to take away the gems from them. You know what I mean? And again, I think it goes back to Lee, what you were talking about. Like, you didn't want to do that. interview, but you did it anyway. And then boom, that gets you an email from the producer of Shark Tank. It's just, it's putting it out there and the hope that it's going to impact somebody else the right way, you know, not being self-serving. And that a lot of times a veteran community doesn't want to get on the mic, but if you can get on the mic and say, hey, this is not to just serve myself, but this is to make the system better, then we need to be telling those stories. And again, I'm just grateful for Griffin Lee coming and kind of pioneering that platform and having the balls to get out there and do it and talk about these things.
Wait, what about special forces?
I was in.
He's being a dick. Don't worry about it.
I'm joking. I'm sorry. I can.
That's why I'm trying to keep his profile over here because I'm the only Marine on this.
It took you a minute to get it, though, right?
Yeah. So the thing that I try to tell, I had a talk with another fellow Ranger, got out, guy's a super dominant athlete, wingsuit flyer. He's going to school to get a history degree and going to be a teacher. And this guy is a machine. Like, I look up to him. You're like, holy crap, man, you're amazing. And he's like, well, I just don't get out. I don't talk much. It's like, that's not our role now, man. The same way that the Army expects guys to be in the Ranger community or SF community, go back into conventional units and to distribute knowledge and information to improve the organization as a whole. When you're a veteran and you get out of the military, it's your job to take those leadership lessons and principles of hard work and dedication and persistence and values and all those other things and improve your local communities. The Greatest Generation didn't become the Greatest Generation just out of nowhere. It became the Greatest Generation because a whole bunch of teamwork oriented veterans came back and kicked ass, right? Like, that's what it is. And it's our job. It's our responsibility to do it now as veterans within our country. Like, we have to do it. There's no choice around it. Our backs are to the wall now. Like, we've got to get out and be community leaders and servants and really like push our values forward. Otherwise, everybody's going to be looking to the nearest chucklehead with a social media account for direction. And that's the wrong answer for our country.
That's the thing that gets me the most stoked about you guys. I was going to say giddy, but giddy sounds like a little bit girly, but stoked is the word. And that's because, you know, I see so many guys out there on social media. And the messages are almost mixed at times. And we have some really positive stories out there, but for some reason, I think a lot of times the negative stories, they get told. And those are the stories that make it out, back out to the civilian world. And those are the stories that tend to get emphasized by the media. But when I see guys like you who have been through hell and who have still been pushing themselves to create something that helps the world, not just helping your wallets, not just in it for the money or the fame or anything like that, but getting into it to help the world. And getting into it to help your community and getting into it to make people's lives better, that makes me so happy. And that you guys are heroes to this community. I think that that's amazing. And, you know, I'm so glad about the reception I think that you guys have gotten. I know you've gotten some negative people trying to throw some slack your way and stuff like that. Bullshit. I just think that all of us have to really get behind people like you because you guys are making this world a better place.
Thank you. It means a lot. I don't even know how to respond to that. So it just means a lot. Thank you very much.
Sorry, you're a super serious Marine guy.
And so, anyway, it's not without struggles though. You know, people, again, and you said it before, you know, people look at entrepreneurs like you're sitting beside the pool. They don't see the years of sitting in an uninsulated windowless garage or sitting in a tiny asshole bedroom or freaking sleeping in the back of your car in between sales meetings, or you can't even afford a hotel. So you sleep at the airport on the floor. You bring your little camping rollout mat because you know you can't afford a hotel. So you're going to go to your meeting and then you're going to go to the airport and roll out your mat from your carry-on bag because you can't even afford to check luggage, right, to do it. And like, that's the hustle you got to make. That's the sacrifice you got to put in if you want to go after it. I don't know. I just think everybody here, or at least the people in our community, we know how to carry heavy loads long distances with limited food and bad weather. and we know how to win when we're doing it. Like, you got to go through that again. I think that, you know, what we've been through for the past 15 years is preparing us for what we're about to go through for the next 15.
So in addition to that, Griff, Lee, what other advice would you give to maybe your younger self or to guys right now, girls right now who are ready to transition and are thinking about, hey, I want to get into the entrepreneurial field. I want to start something. You know, what are some advice that you usually give out to people in that situation?
I think the common one that, you know, a lot of people throw around is fail fast, right? And don't be scared to go outside your comfort zone. I think that was the hardest lesson for me to learn early on, was to not be afraid to go outside of the comfort zone. A lot of times, you know, when you're working on specific parts of your business, you get tunnel vision, and that's all that you see. And then pretty soon after doing it for a while, you end up not wanting to go out of that. You don't want to change the way you think about a specific piece of your business because what you've been doing seems to be working, or that's what you really know, right? I think for me, it's get outside of your comfort zone. If you don't understand something, go out there and either learn it, try it, figure it out. That for me is the biggest takeaway I've had because of combat football. The things that we're doing and the initiatives that I've had to run and you know, my areas of responsibility, it's like, I have to step out and do things that I'm not comfortable doing because I've never done them, and go out there, do them, learn them, do them well, do them good, and conquer any doubts that you have. Right. It's just learn as much as you can.
I think, he covered the failure one. So I'll go for the other one is, you can't pour from an empty cup. Right. You got to take care of yourself if you want to be providing for others. Right. And that means like providing for your family, providing for your employees or whatever is like, you can't pour from an empty cup. So you got to take care of yourself. I've fallen victim to it. Like, I've drank too much. I haven't worked out. I've sat at my computer. I've done the long hours, but you need to be dedicated and disciplined to get your rituals down and like take that time out, go meditate, go do some yoga, go out for a run. Like, you don't need to be working on Friday night. Stop. Take your wife out for dinner. Like, it may not be a nice one because you can't afford it, but stop and take that time. Put your cell phone down. Get away from it. Like, you got to fill your cup back up, right? So that way you can fill up others. And it always works around you. You don't think you could be making more progress working, and you can't. You need to take that break and take care of yourself too.
We're gonna get off in just a second. Griff, I know you have to go, but I want to ask you guys two more questions. Number one, what is one book that you would recommend to everybody out there?
I got a couple that I really like. So Lee, I'll let you hit it first.
You know, I really, I'll be honest, and this is going to sound kind of dumb, but I don't really read business books. I don't, I stay away from them. That's just me. I don't want to sound really stupid because there's there's people out there that are a lot smarter than me at running a business and being entrepreneurs. And I'm sure they have really great stuff that they put down, but, I don't want to say that I don't want to start living somebody else's vision or living by somebody else's rules, but that's just where my mind's at. You can say it might be a little stupid, but that's where I'm at. So I really can't recommend a book. Like, I can't. Griff has a million books. He's probably going to ramble off. So
yeah. So I would say, like, starting in business, if you want to get a business degree, people going into entrepreneurship, don't go get an MBA.
Right.
Don't do it. The best MBA you can get is running your own business. There's a program called personalmba.com. It's 99 books. If you read them and understand the concepts, you'll have an Ivy League MBA for the cost of a library card. Like, go figure it out on your own. Don't sit there and listen to a teacher teach you a concept that he learned 15 years ago and failed, so he got into a teaching job. Like, don't do that. Just go get the recent book, understand the concept, and go put it in an application. But the two books that I really enjoyed that I've really read over the last year that have really made an impact is Drive by Daniel Pink.
Yep.
And he talks about the three things is that you really need to have a successful organization that you put into your team. And one's autonomy, is you need to encourage and hire people that can work autonomously. Second is mastery. You need to be improving yourself, and you need to surround yourselves with people who are always trying to improve themselves. And the third is purpose, is you need to have a purpose, and you need to be able to provide that purpose to people in your team, which I think that we do as a company. We're a remote work environment. Everybody's committed to being better. And then our purpose is to put little girls in school and arm conflict through manufacturing and trade, right? That's it. And then the second one I just read is a fantastic book. It's called The Way of the Tiger, Gentle Wisdom for Turbulent Times. And basically it says the best thing you can do for an organization is just be the best you. That's it. Be the best you.
And then Lee, somebody asked on Instagram what your sign was, what your astral.
What my sign was? I'm an Aquarius.
Was that the only question?
No. The people wanted to know about Shark Tank. They also want to know about Lee's astrological sign. Well, I guess that was you, Griff.
That was me.
they wanted to know if you guys are ever planning on writing your own book.
Griff probably has 5 books in the making that are going on right now.
Oh, man. I can't even contemplate it yet. We've had so many stupid adventures. I've always been thinking about having like people like our nanny write it when my wife and I were both executives, and the dumbass shit we did when we were executives, and raising 2 little girls and the adventures we had, and just having like different people in our lives like write the books for different years, because it's crazy. So, but I'm sure it'll happen at some point in the future.
And go ahead, Andrew. Sorry.
I was going to say, going back to the Way of the Tiger. Was that the name of it, Griff?
Yeah, it's called The Way of the Tiger. The subline is Gentle Wisdom for Turbulent Times.
Yeah, but I was just going to say, you nailed it, because bringing your best self, your best, performing to the best of your abilities, what else can you ask of yourself? What else can you do but then your best? You know what I mean? And that is what it's all about. You break it down right there. All you got to do is your best.
Yep. And it doesn't mean I did my best in kind of a halfway. It means, no, you left it all out there on the field.
Yeah. And, you know, there's always room for improvement. You know, we can always improve on our best. But today, my workup, everything else, it was my best. And here's my weak points. Here's how I can improve. But I sold out. You know what I mean? And that's where we start seeing these big improvements that that are happening with you guys. Chris, turn it back over to you, my man.
I'm going to put all these resources into the show notes. And then I wanted to ask you guys, where can people find you on the interweb universe? Twitter account, website, things like that.
Everything is at Combat Flip Flops.
Everything's at Combat Flip
Flops. Everything. So www.combatflipflops is the website. Facebook, Combat Flip Flops. Instagram, Combat Flip Flops. Twitter, Combat Flip Flops. My favorite is SoundCloud. So Beats on Combat Flip Flops. And then, I don't know, do we get a Snapchat? I've been asking this to everybody and nobody's even responded to Snapchat.
I don't know.
You could get Snapchat. The coolest thing about Snapchat is like all the funny stuff you guys do and like kind of quirky stuff. You could bring that out. Because like on Instagram and then like Facebook, you have limited space and limited attention. But when you're going through Snapchat, if you wanted to like do like a funny skit or like a funny thing all, you know, through the day, I know some people who masterfully use, matter of fact, if you get on Snapchat, look up Man Behind Metroflex. It's a good friend of mine, and I'll send you guys a thing, and he does it really well. So,
hold on, thank you.
Funny, hilarious stuff. But I wanted to thank you guys for coming on here. I wanted to thank you guys for your message. Was that a Diet Coke?
No, that was a Melvin.
Wow.
It's a beer. It's a MPA, which I don't even know what that means.
Melvin Pale Ale.
What is it?
Melvin Pale Ale, maybe?
Melvin Pale Ale, yeah. From Alpine, Wyoming. Made by a wild goose ale.
Nice. Well, yeah. Shout out to Melvin Pale Ale.
It's Friday, guys. Come on.
Yeah. I wanted to thank you guys for coming on here. There's so many gems that you guys gave in this podcast. I think that anybody who listens to this is going to be able to put themselves on a righteous path as far as business goes, as far as life goes. And again, I want to thank you as a veteran, because the positive example that you guys are setting for this community and demonstrating what you can do if you start to take charge of your own circumstances, if you start to take charge of making your own action to accomplish great things, that's absolutely outstanding. And I wish you guys both so much success, and anything that we can do over here to help you guys out, anything you guys want us to post or anything like that, please let us know. Andrew, you got anything?
Nothing, man. You guys keep on keeping on. Thanks for the inspiration and what you mean and the mission and the work that you're doing. Like I said, it means a lot, because we need guys walking the walk and talking the talk, and you're doing both. So my hat's off to you.
Thank you very much, guys. Appreciate it.
We really appreciate it. Thank you for having us.
What's going on, guys? This is Chris again, and I got so much out of that episode, and I hope you did as well. These guys have done so much and been through so much, and their story's not even over yet. It's not even begun. But the biggest thing I want to reiterate to you guys is for you to think about that. What do you want the story of your life to be? Who are you going to help? What are you going to make your purpose? What is your why? Because you need to understand what your why is. That is what's going to help you to get through your hard times. That's what's going to help you when you don't want to wake up anymore. You don't want to keep grinding. You don't want to keep working. Your why is going to tell you what your purpose is, and your why is going to keep you from failure. Remember that failure doesn't look like the Grim Reaper. It's not some scary thing. It looks like your couch. It looks like your television set. It looks like that awesome ice cream cone that you see when you're trying to lose weight. And Griff and Lee are people who live according to their why. They've gotten shut down. They've gotten beaten up in their process to become entrepreneurs, but they kept persisting. And if we want to succeed, we need to persist as well. So that brings this episode to an end. I just want to ask you guys, we don't ask for donations here. We're not looking for sponsorships, but we do want reviews. We want to know what you think about the podcast. So if you can hop on iTunes and write us a quick review, it doesn't have to be long, just two or three sentences. Let us know what we're doing right. Let us know what we're doing wrong. And we value that almost even more than money. So the other thing I want to say is that I know that by the time you hear this episode, it will probably be Veterans Day. So I just want to say thank you to all of you out there who have served this wonderful country, and a big thank you in remembrance of the souls of the brothers and sisters we've lost in fighting for this country. On top of that, I have to throw this in there, a happy 241st birthday to all of you serving in the United States Marine Corps and in the Fleet Marine Force as Navy Corpsman. So thank you so much, all of you, and I look forward to talking to you.